It's Sunday, January 8th, 2012. It's a workshop in Edison, New Jersey, Recovery Beyond Our Wildest Dreams. We're going to start in a minute. All right, folks, we're going to start now.
You don't have to sit up here unless you want to.
We're not going to pick it, but I just came to think of it.
Michelle, we're going to be taking time, if that's okay with you. I need to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Folks, are you ready? This is the device that we use, Michelle.
Yeah.
Michelle, this is the recorder. Very simple. I'm just going to slide it down the table, that's all.
How many minutes do we have?
You can give me 15 or 20. You can talk. And you can stand here or sit down, whatever you prefer.
Good.
Go for it, honey. Talk away. Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Sunday evening workshop entitled Recovery Beyond Your Wildest Dreams. My name is Margaret. I'm a compulsive overeater. This is a workshop dedicating to addressing relapse and supporting the still suffering compulsive overeater inside the fellowship. My first year in program, they had a marathon out in Bridgewater in June on recovery after relapse. And I figured I hadn't started working the program yet, so I hadn't relapsed, so I really didn't need to go to it. My thinking has changed a little bit since then. Would all those who care to, please join me in the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant us serenity, accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right. Tonight we're going to be discussing one of the many tools that will get us into relapse, and that is denial. Anybody ever hear of it? That's the one. But before we start talking about that a little bit, there is a book out called A New Beginning that OA's had out for a number of years. And on our website and the worldwide website, there's a list of questions called Slipping and Sliding that are geared toward reading the stories. I've had sponsees get abstinent from reading this book and writing on those questions. And some of the questions that are asked there is, what is a slip? What is a break in abstinence? What is relapse? And I highly encourage you, in the early part of working with a sponsor, to define the difference between a slip and a break in abstinence before you have a problem with food, because denial kicks in and nothing will be a break in relapse unless you define it real clearly. Relapse is a condition where a compulsive eater returns to their old eating habits after a period of abstinence and is defined by the individual, hopefully with a sponsor. Relapse is experienced by many, many OAers. On a physical level, it can be binge eating, it can be eating foods that are on your I'm never going to eat this list. It can include vomiting, fasting, starvation, compulsive exercising, use of laxatives, and a variety of other lovely behaviors. On an emotional level, it is a return to the former negative behavior, destructive attitudes, the loss of faith in a power greater than oneself, and the reappearance of character defects that dominate the individual's behavior. Relapse sometimes begins with the assumption that we're cured, or I'm cured. No longer need the daily practice of this program. There is many, many symptoms of relapse that appear long before the food is picked up. But I have given you in your handout tonight, does everybody have one? Program? On your second page, you have steps to a slip inventory. There's 8 steps to follow here, which includes the tool of writing. So if you're having a problem with food, you don't have to wait till the next morning to call a sponsor or till that night to call a sponsor. If you want to just keep it a problem and not a full-fledged slide into the refrigerator head first, you can sit down and you can examine what's going on with yourself instead of just thinking it's the food that called you, because there's thinking behaviors that get distorted. It's a type of denial. And when we make decisions alone with the disease, oftentimes the disease will win. Now, we have several speakers tonight who all have relapse in their backgrounds. And I'm going to pass the microphone to my left, and Diane will be our first speaker.
Hi, I'm Diane Jay, and I'm a compulsive overeater and recovering food addict.
Hi, Diane.
I am also speaking for the first time at a meeting. So if I start blathering, just like send up a hand signal or something. Anyway, I started in OA in about 1997. And when I came, it wasn't just for diet and the physical aspect. I have a very good friend who's in recovery in AA. And my life was very tumultuous at that point. I had, my father was suffering from Alzheimer's. I had a lot of family issues. And anyone who's had a family member with Alzheimer's, all the family dysfunction that's there comes bubbling to the surface. It's kind of like a magnet. So there was a lot of insanity in my life. I had been seeing a counselor, which was really helpful. But this friend who was in recovery for AA used to always say to me, "You know, Diane, it's a shame you don't like to drink. You'd make such a good alcoholic." And I actually used to answer her that my drug of choice is food. And it's almost as if, you know, Margaret was talking about denial. Even though I guess I was in denial on some level because I wasn't doing anything about it, and I kind of knew about OA, but obviously I knew. I always knew my drug of choice is food, and it's been that way my whole life. So without, you know, doing the whole history, my history is very familiar to, you know, most compulsive overeaters. I started young, long history of dieting. I was either gaining or losing weight. But all the other behaviors, the isolation, you know, anger, all those things were always there. My first round in OA, I was a little dumb, and it was a good thing because I went to a meeting and I knew I was supposed to get a food plan and get a sponsor, and I knew I was supposed to get abstinent. And I had no idea that any of this was optional. So I didn't want to get kicked out. And I did at the first meeting. I found one person who I begged to be my sponsor. And she gave me her phone number, and I called her. And she said, "You need a food plan. This is kind of the basics. And what you'll do is you'll write down your food plan, and you'll call me, and you'll tell me about it." I said, "Okay." She said, "Do you have a food plan in mind?" I'm like, "No." So she gave me a few guidelines, and she said, "Well, you know, generally people tend to abstain from sugar and white flour and have some type of way of monitoring what they're going to eat and what their portions should be and all that." So she gave me some guidelines, and I came up with what I thought was a brilliant idea. It took me about 5 minutes to figure out my food plan. I looked on the nutrition labels, and it says, "Based on a 2,000-calorie diet." I thought, okay, that's it. If, you know, the nutrition labels say that's what I'm supposed to eat, I'll eat that. And by the grace of God, it worked. I just, you know, her guidance and the FDA did it for me, and that was my food plan. And it worked for a long time, and I went to meetings, and I called her every day and did a lot of work with her. But there were a lot of things the first time around I didn't do. I didn't do service, which is why, how many years later is this? 15 years later, I'm speaking at a meeting for the first time. I never sponsored. I really didn't contribute to the group I went to. And I really didn't work the steps. I kind of gave a little lip service to it, but I really didn't do do the work that I needed to. And even still, higher power and OA got me through some rough times. I had odd number of years where like some pretty significant things happened. My father's death was in 97. In 99, I was diagnosed with advanced breast cancer. In 2001, a pretty dysfunctional marriage of about 16 years ended. And as weird as it sounds, I did great through program, through all of that. And my biggest problem came when the dust settled. And my life after was just so good. And I liked my work. I had friends. I liked my home. I had achieved, you know, physical abstinence. I was happy with my body for probably the first time in my life. That didn't last too long either, but, you know, that's another story. My relapse is like a poster child for Margaret's list that she read. The first thing I did was I thought, well, you know, I've been through so much, and I really did a lot of soul searching, and prior to program, I really didn't have a connection with a higher power, and I really did. I felt a spirituality, and so many things were so good, and I really started to think, hey, you know, I don't need to be doing this. And I didn't go to meetings as much. And since I wasn't really doing the other stuff, yeah, the meetings started to slip. And then calling my sponsor started to slip. And then eventually my food plan started to slip. And eventually my sanity started to slip. So coming back was pretty simple. I've had a lot of, again, good things happen in my life. But I noticed that the difference this time is I wasn't having the same gratitude. And even though so many good things were happening, I really still had the anger creeping back and all that thinking and all those things that I had prior were there again. And I thought about it and I'm like, you know what? I need a meeting. And I just got on the internet, looked up the schedule, and I went. And coming back has not been all that easy. Abstinence has not been the cakewalk that it was the first time. It was a gift of God. And abstinence came easy. Like I said, it was also a little ignorance. I thought I'd get kicked out if I didn't stay abstinent. And this time, it's been a struggle. And I've really had to look at the idea that, first of all, you know, I had to get over some denial of things about where I was. And you know, you hear how if you pick up again, your disease progresses as if you never had any time in recovery. And again, I can say for myself that I think that's true, because so many things are more challenging this time around. But the good part is I know that I really have to keep working the tools, working the program, one day at a time, one step at a time. Just had a brain spasm. I also know that, you know, I need to avoid another of my character defects, which is I can be very much perfectionistic and worried that if I'm not doing it perfectly, that I'm not doing it right. So, you know, the fact that sometimes, you know, I've had slips in my abstinence and it's been hard one to get back, that doesn't mean to stop. That means keep coming to meetings, keep calling my sponsor, keep praying, keep trying to work the steps, keep writing, which I hate to do. So one of these days I'll learn to like it. But I actually have been doing some writing. I wrote today. Reading, I love. I love reading. I don't like making phone calls. Not a good phone caller, but, you know, I've been trying. So the fact that I am not, you know, putting my little OA tiara on and working perfectly is got to be okay, because that's who I am. And, you know, I'm just really grateful, so grateful to be here and to be back. And to have my sponsor, have meetings to go to, and just keep trying to work my program one day at a time.
And I'm going to pass.
R12 and 12 says no one is excluded from OA membership because of his or her personal opinion on how to achieve abstinence. Note too that while the desire to stop eating compulsively is required, a person doesn't have to be abstinent to be welcome at OA meetings. I'd like each of you to think, are the meetings that you go to welcoming to everyone who comes through the door? Are they as welcoming to people in relapse as they are to people who are successful? Is it a meeting that enables people to feel comfortable sharing what's going on in their lives? Now, I'm not talking about the details of what the bakery's selling. I'm talking about emotions, because it's not, you know, we're not a therapy session. We're not here for diet tips. We're here for recovery. And some people say, if you go to a meeting and don't share, you didn't go to a meeting. But if you keep going to meetings and you don't share at all, you're on the periphery of OA. I've relapsed in OA and I've relapsed in another fellowship. And it's like getting on a train. You're not going to jump off. I went on total shutdown. Didn't share about what was going on with me. People had expectations, sometimes have expectations that when you're in recovery, it's Disneyland, and it's not. I still have the same gamut of emotions that I had before. But what I need myself from meetings is I need a speaker meeting each week. I've always had a home group. It was originally the Elizabeth group, and then when I moved to Middlesex County here, I like hearing people share their experience, strength, and hope, just like Bill W. shared it with Dr. Bob, and that's the moment that AA was founded. And I think in speaker meetings, we recreate that moment. We tell people to try at least 6 meetings, and hopefully they too, like I did, will identify with someone's thinking pattern. Oh, yeah, I felt like that, and get interested and really get involved and join OA. And I also need people to share on the truth that they relapse, that life is not good out there, because I learned from the negative. If I went to a meeting and everybody was happy, joyous, and free, and abstinent for 20 years, I would feel like I was on a foreign planet. I need the negative. I like being around newly recovered energy, but I also carry in my mind the picture of the quiet people that aren't sharing anymore, the people that look uncomfortable. As I said to someone this morning, the woman sitting there in April wearing the heavy winter coat because she doesn't want anyone to see she gained weight with the unhappy look on her face. And I carry those images home with me, and I find them just as helpful as I do the stories of people in recovery. A few years ago, the Wednesday night Lawrence Harbor meeting started a recovery after relapse meeting. And I went to it, and people seemed very comfortable sharing about exactly where they were in program. And it was nice to see people leave that spot and get better. I'd like to think that this meeting and all the meetings that I go to are welcoming to people. But sometimes I find that the attention, the conversations become a little different with someone who's in relapse. I hear a lot of advice being given. I think people need an ear. They want someone who'll listen and just wish them the best without being inundated with a whole long list of suggestions. Like, I guess you were in a fit spiritual condition, that's why you relapsed. That's not relatable when you're in the food. It just doesn't relate. It's like saying you did something wrong. So what can we do in our meetings to keep the members that we have, even when they stray, even when they're not abstinent, even when they've struggled a long time? We formed a 12-step within committee here in Edison. It's the committee that's presenting this workshop tonight. Our intergroup has one. They say that every OA event should feature at least one speaker with relapse in their background. And just talking to you for a little food for thought. So again, our OA World Service says you do not have to be an abstinent member to be a member of OA. All that you have to do really is walk in the door and say, I have a problem with food. Our next speaker for this evening is Michelle. Hello.
I'm Michelle, welcome.
Thank you.
Show me how to use the lens.
Oh, yeah, you gotta just have, you have to have it really close because it's...
Real close.
Yeah, like almost touching.
Closer. That's too intimate. I know, you kiss it.
Yeah, you have to have your mouth almost on it.
Okay. All righty. Good to see all those I know. Good to see all those I don't know. It's been many, many years since I spoke at this meeting. It's wonderful to be here. My middle name is Relapse. That is my middle name. I didn't want to settle. I'm in these rooms for 37 years, and all the recovery I've had, no one can take that away from me. All the relapse I've had was quite a humbling experience for me. I probably relapsed for every reason that I've ever heard in these rooms. I was there. I relapsed. My pattern is I'm very, very strong in recovery, and I can just fall down. I don't care how strong I am. Life hasn't gone my way. I'll pick up. I'll take a bite because I don't want to feel the pain. What are other things I can do not to feel the pain? Take on other addictions like too much spending, too much watching TV. Those I now watch for. Those are relapse warning signs. When I isolate, when I suffer from I don't feel like it, that's a real big warning sign for me, a real big relapse warning sign, the I don't feel like it. Life doesn't go my way. I become very sad. I go into self-pity. Thank you, God, but that character defect has been removed as soon as I identified it. I thought self-pity was not my cup of tea. It turned out that there is some there. And when I recognized it, it disappeared just because I recognized it. I had to accept a food plan in my life that I resented the most. It gives me no wiggle room. You want to call me rigid? Go right ahead. But I'm not relapsing on this food plan. It took away all the addictive substances that I was probably addicted to. My downfall was believing that this is not that bad. It is that bad. If it wasn't that bad, I don't need to be in these rooms. My other downfall was that I thought I could do it myself. I gained all this knowledge. I'm so smart. I know everything. I know what to do. Not when it comes to me. I need a sponsor to make the suggestions because I don't have any objectivity when it comes to me. My other downfall was to just give up. When I'm in relapse, I don't run out of excuses why I should not come back. Some of them are in the form of self-condemnation. Some of them are in the form of shame. Some of them are in the form of depression. I just don't run out of the excuses. I'll start tomorrow. A wonderful excuse, just a wonderful excuse. I lacked good information as far as good nutrition was concerned. And nowadays the nutritionists say, you can have a little bit of this. That's their MO. Well, I consider myself a food addict, and with a food addiction, I'm not a compulsive overeater. I'm a food addict. I am addicted to substances, and I believe the food vendors that this is healthy for you. Well, no, it's not for me, because I'm going to pick up some more. I cannot stop. I denied that. Powerless? Yes, I'm powerless. Intellectually, I'm powerless. Once I pick up, don't tell me I'm powerless. I'll show you I'm powerless. I forget also that this is a spiritual malady. I've had to forgive the unforgivable. To do that, I've had to go through about 20 years of anger. I had to peel a lot of onions here, a lot of layers off that onion, to get to the point of forgiveness. Acceptance. I can binge emotionally. When I binge emotionally, that's a very, very big relapse warning sign. I also need a signal when I need to stop, because I don't shut up.
If you see two heads, two or three heads nodding.
Okay, thank you. I also ingested addictive substances, so I never really detoxed. I didn't want to settle. I didn't want to settle for the 0-1 dance. I think for me, it's worse to be in the 0-1 dance than either abstain or relapse. Do something, but don't go into the 0-1 dance. Because for me, that's even more torture. At least when I'm in binge mode, I know I'm in binge mode. At least when I'm in recovery mode, I know I'm in recovery mode. But in and out, the body doesn't like it, the psyche doesn't like it, and I made the mistake of believing that this disease doesn't kill. When I pick up, it kills me emotionally, and it cuts me off spiritually. It kills me spiritually. That's what happens when I pick up. I remove myself from the spiritual. And once I do that, all hope is lost. And I don't know that I can come back. This time around, I'm 62. I started when I was 25. I don't know that I'm going to want to come back. I'm hanging on to recovery for dear life. Another relapse warning sign for me is my negative thinking. That kills me. That just kills me with the negative thinking. I'm no good. I'm not good enough. I'm a failure. I'm going to get rejected. That negative thinking, that chattering just doesn't stop. I had to adopt affirmations. I am enough. I'm good enough. I have enough. I do enough. I had to adopt that. I handle challenge well when challenge comes upon me. I think I've handled my life pretty well, but that self-condemnation never ever let me realize that I handled it very well. I had divine strength, I had divine courage, and I handled things well. I never recognized that. Therefore, relapse. Let's relapse. My life just doesn't go my way. Is life painful today? Yes. Did anybody say life was going to be good? Nobody guaranteed me that. I did get divine strength to handle the pain. I did get divine courage to do something about it. And then I have the divine here, a higher power here. I have places to take my pain to. I learned to take my pain to the appropriate people. Sometimes my pain is so overwhelming to others that they say the wrong things to me. My pain has been overwhelming to therapists. I have to be careful what therapists I see. Acceptance, just the spiritual principle. I love and accept my family just the way they are, period. Expectations, that'll kill me. That'll get me right into relapse. I cannot afford expectations. Expectations will keep me perpetually disappointed. Disappointment gets me into relapse. Some of the things that I lie to myself with, I'll feel better after I eat. Those foods will make me feel worse. not better. I think I can handle it. I can't handle it. It will kill me. I can't handle it. My binging and my relapse warning signs are always start emotionally, always. Before I take that first bite, there's been a lot of relapse warning signs that I have overlooked. That first bite doesn't just come out of nowhere. I probably was too negative, too scared. That famous halt line we have, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I don't take too much. I don't take too little. I stop measuring. That's a killer. That puts me right in relapse. I'm making myself accountable to my sponsor. When I change my food, I tell her, just a habit. I can't believe what freedom it gives me just to tell her I changed my food. This way, I don't have to have it in my mind. Did I do it right? Did I do it wrong? Did I take too much? Did I take too... This is what I did. That's it. And it's a very, very good habit to get myself into. Not to punish myself, to take responsibility and have accountability, because my disease is a form of insanity. That is my way of preserving my sanity and to go on with a new beginning, a rebirth. I changed my food. I did okay. I used to say, so what? I'm abstinent. Who cares? I'm still abstinent. I'm off balance. Off balance means I'm going to relapse. I'm very careful now to watch those relapse warning signs. I also went into self-reliance. No good. No good. Self-reliance is no good for me. This disease really humbled me, really made me very spiritual. The lash of this disease is something I didn't want to face. I just didn't want to face how harsh this disease is. It's very harsh. It kept me in relapse many, many years. My relapses last for years. They don't last for a day or two. They don't last for a week. When I'm struggling, it's too late. When I'm asking God, please, please don't let me pick up, it's too late. It's an indication that I didn't do my homework. I was led to do this homework, but I didn't do it. And I find out with a clearer mind that I need more work. I need to do more work. I'm not a failure. I just need to do more work. That's all it is. I'm not a failure when I relapse either. I have a disease. This self-condemnation keeps me in the disease. So I no longer condemn myself for relapsing, but I don't relapse anymore. By the grace of God, it's been over a year and a half since my last relapse. What happened on my last relapse? Mama passed away. That's all that happened. I was in grief. I was very strong recovery. I just couldn't take the sadness. It was a mercy death. She had Alzheimer's. She didn't know who's who. She recognized me. That was enough for me. Her last words, she didn't know what she was talking about, but her last words to me was, oh, I missed you. Where were you? She recognized me the very last, to the very last. That was God talking. I believe God talked to me through her. She never talked again. Within 3 days, she passed away after that. She passed away very peacefully. I held her hand. My sister held her other hand. And we knew when she passed. And we cried. I didn't want to feel the pain. So I relapsed. At first, when I knew she was in hospice, I took up another addiction. I have more lipsticks than I know what to do with. That was a relapse warning sign, believe it or not. I thought I was very strong in recovery. That was a very, very big relapse warning sign. Very, very big. Life had its joys, too. I have a little grandson. He's just wonderful. And when I'm in recovery, I can notice the joy. When I'm in relapse, joy comes. But I'm so bitter and I'm so busy into the food, I can hardly notice the joy. Who moves away from God? It's always me. Except when I'm the one who moves away, I don't realize that God is holding my hand even tighter. All the times that I've been in relapse, I saw that God held my hand even tighter. When I wanted to come back, I said, God, I want to come back. How do I do it? He said to me, you can come back anytime you want. This is the path. Take it or leave it. I decided to take the path. If you want to be abstinent, you can be. That's the voice I heard talking to me. These are the steps you take. Work the steps. I said, damn. He said, work the steps. I'm working the steps. That is what I have to do. I'm just working the steps. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's coffee available over here. There is a handicapped accessible bathroom through the door to the left of the coffee. Other bathrooms are in the hallway over here. Help yourself to coffee or water at any time. There was a young lady who would come in and out of OA every 6 or 7 months. And at one time she had been maybe 160 pounds lighter. And every time she came back, I saw more weight on, more weight on. And finally it all appeared to be back. And I tried to be polite, the way when you run into somebody in the supermarket, I try to keep my eyes up, not looking to see what they bought in the cart, and try to make eye contact with somebody who had gained weight. But she said to me, she says, Margaret, I've got it all back on, plus some. I said, oh, congratulations. I said, now you can go down again. I said, when I relapsed, I went not quite up to my top weight. I only hit 475. But I could go out and eat again and gain those 10 pounds. I'll be back in an hour. Because that's what it seemed like. Oh my God, you know, the numbers. And I know it usually goes, your weight usually goes way above what it was before you started. I relapsed because I was in a state of fear. And I didn't do anything about it. Fear of ill health, fear of death, whatever you want to call it. And I let it erode the quality of my days until I just felt like I was in a state of fear constantly. Wasn't quite aware what was going on around me for a long time, including how much food I was eating, what I was doing. But it was just plain old-fashioned fear. And denial is the way out of it. I didn't have to face the fears if I didn't do anything about them. But I still felt the fear. Whatever uncomfortable emotion I hit and I back away from it, I'm rationalizing. My best example of denial was when I first came into the rooms in 97. I couldn't buy underpants that fit me anymore. I was above the top size in the store. So for a long time, I wasn't wearing underpants. I was wearing pantyhose. They're great on a 95-degree day. Nothing like them, you know. I had all sorts of reasons why I wore them. But my life was manageable. I was covered appropriately. I just didn't happen to wear underpants. Didn't do anything about the problem, didn't talk to anybody about it. It was no issue, really. And all the things that I rationalized, it was okay, as long as I didn't do anything about it. Didn't really confront it, didn't special order, didn't embarrass myself. I just was a woman who had no underpants. Today I have underpants. No problem. I have a red one on tonight. I have a red one. But when I went back up with the weight gain, we were getting very dangerously close to the point where no traditional underpants would fit again. I don't really know if I've gone back to wearing pantyhose, God knows, but that's how denial works. I have no problem, I just don't look at it. I push down unpleasant feelings. I refuse to admit I have problems, and if I'm refusing to admit that I have a problem, I'm never really doing the surrender process that the first step requires to get started in recovery. I'm not using the tools in the program. They're all tools of surrender. They lower my ego. They put me in a place where God can step in and take over my life. But none of this occurs unless I surrender. So a woman taking a 10-year coin one time, and she said, I surrendered many times along the journey. And I got it. It's not just the daily steps 1, 2, 3 in the morning. I have to surrender to what God's will quite a few times during the course of the day. But the food is the beginning, and without surrendering the food, none of the other parts of my life worked. I've been very grateful to be back in recovery. And it's true. You get the spiritual connection back in a very brief period of time. I was very lonely when I was in relapse. I had lost that conversational aspect of the higher power. I had no one to talk to except to the disease. Now, we have another speaker this first half, and I think it's been over 5 years since Natalie's spoken in these rooms. She has several weeks of abstinence, and here she is.
I'm going to stand. Hi, everybody. Can you hear me in the back?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, I'm Natalie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Margaret.
Natalie.
Sorry.
You know me. But you can call me Margaret. That's actually it. So just as I start, because we've listened to a couple of speakers, for those who wish to, if you don't mind standing, taking a big breath, and just kind of shaking it out a little bit before we go back and listen to me doing the, as Margaret says, the yada yada. What? This isn't technically exercise, don't worry. Anyway, so my name is Natalie, and for many, many years since I came into OA in 1997, can you guys hear me better? I would say that I was a compulsive overeater, and I felt that that was exactly what I was. But
hold the microphone by the bottom.
By the bottom?
Better?
Okay. Yes. So that's what I felt like I was. But since I earned the title, since the last 5 or 6 years since I've been in and out of relapse, I have earned the title of food addict. So now, when I introduce myself, I am both a compulsive overeater, because that is my behavior, and I am a food addict, because I am addicted to sugar and flour. I'm not sure about wheat, but I abstain anyway. I've been in OA since 1997. I came in when I was 23 years old, and my life was highly unmanageable. I was weighed about 230 pounds. You're probably looking at me now thinking, well, she's still about 230. And you're pretty right. And the reason I'm close to that, a little less, thank God, is because I have a history of a lot of recovery and a lot of relapse. I've been in program, this March will be 15 years. So I've been here a long time, most of my adult life. And I had, prior to this last relapse, I had 2 other relapses. The first was the first year after program, which was, the relapse lasted a week. The second one came about 2.5 years into program, and it lasted 3 months. And this last one lasted 6 years. I mean, that is not even funny how disproportional that is. And I related very much with what the speakers were talking about, because This last relapse, I had a lot of the manifestations of denial and dishonesty and fear unaddressed that many people spoke about. For me, and I'm actually only absent 5 weeks, and I was asked to share last night, and I'm going to be sharing again next week. I haven't had the privilege, the abstinence, to get the privilege to share at a meeting. I haven't had the privilege to share, to sponsor, and do other service that I'm not able to do because I don't have the abstinence requirement. I'm slowly working back to that. I'm not liking this microphone. Do I have to use it?
We'll give you the other one.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Test it?
Okay. Without it? Okay. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's a little distracting. I just have 5 weeks back. I really don't know why this time feels different. I just pray one day at a time that it is. I'll tell you what happened, because when I hear speakers talk, I really need to hear the story, even if it's not a very fun and pleasant story. It started about 6 years ago, a little bit before I got pregnant with my first child. I had a lot of fear about becoming a new mom, and it was a huge life change. When I was working program before that, I worked, I had a spouse, and then I had me. I took care of me. I had plenty of time on my hands. I went to 3 meetings. I had plenty of time to do what I needed to do. And with all of the changes that were happening, or about to happen in my life, there was a lot of fear. And it was really left unaddressed. So I slid into relapse because it was permissible given my health condition. And I stayed there. I stayed there for 5.5 years. Now, I did have periods of abstinence in there. They were short-lived. They were 2 days. They were a few hours. They were sometimes a couple of weeks. I could not manage to put together even 30 days to do service in this particular meeting. It's an OA program, but it's sort of a little more stricter version. It's called HOW. So I have a weight and measure food plan. I'm required to call my sponsor every day, do a writing, reading, all the tools that you hear about are required. And I knew that the level of food addict that I was, I needed to go back to that program. But I was really afraid. I did not want to give up the food. And I remember talking to people from all over the country, because I sometimes go to phone meetings, and one woman said to me, she's like, you have to finish eating. You have to get to a point where you don't want to eat more than you want to eat. When you tip that scale, you're ready to work this program. Because the first couple of days, about 4 for me, is really hard. It's hard because I'm withdrawing physically and emotionally and somewhat spiritually as well. I want the food. Whenever that anxiety or discomfort or whatever, whether it be hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or sick, or just any other kind of whatever, I want to put something in my mouth. And the reason that I was not abstinent for 6 years is because I did. Because I could not get past that little point, which was maybe 10 minutes, an hour of discomfort, and I would put something in my mouth. And the minute I put it in my mouth, I slid down back into relapse. And what often happened is that day was shot. I can never get my abstinence back once I lose it. So it's better for me to lose it in the evening because that leaves less time. But I just can't do it. I've never, ever been able to pick myself up in the middle of the day. And that's unfortunate for my program because I stayed in relapse a long time. During my 6 years, I had 2 children. I actually lost a lot of my weight after my first child when I was working a semi-decent program, some abstinence, some not, slipping, sliding, not weighing and measuring. Then when I got pregnant with my second child, it got worse. And because I was nauseous and various other things, I gave myself a lot of permission to eat. And sometimes I'd go to the doctor and it would be like, wow, how much bigger can I get? And the answer was, I went up from when I began my relapse, not that most people count that, but when I began my relapse, I was about 170, I went up to 260, that was my height. When I had my second child, I went down to 235. And it wasn't a huge amount. I wanted to lose 50 pounds. Unfortunately, she was much smaller than that. Anyway, one of my bottoms of sheer desperation, because anyone who's had even a dad or a mom, young child, the first month or two is, to me, incredibly difficult. It's taxing in every which way. The hardest part for me was the sleep deprivation. And I found myself, about 2 months into my second child, with her in my back seat in her little, you know, bucket thing, calling my sponsor, my old sponsor, because I had left program for a year because I was too busy with my life to do my program, and saying, I need help. I cannot parent. I'm crying all the time. I'm eating my head off. And like none of this, nothing is working. I hate my husband. I mean, everything was really, really, really unmanageable. All the character defects were back, and were back in full gear. I was angry, I was resentful, judgmental, irritable, condescending, critical, nasty, cranky, I mean, every which way.
That was a good day.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a sugar addict. And I always, you know, for those of you who've been in relapse, you probably could relate. My relapse habits are very exactly the same, regardless of how long it's been since I've been in relapse. I go back to the same foods in the same manner every single time. My tastes don't change. I still like the same stuff when I pick it up. Same with my abstinence. I have very similar abstinence habits, whether I've been abstinent a long time or, you know, have had some relapse in between. So I knew I needed to come back to a strict program, but I wasn't done eating. So I ate for 6 years. I ate on and off for 6 years. I stayed about the same in my weight, more or less, but I certainly didn't drop. I didn't talk about what I was going through until I started to work my program again, even though I wasn't in recovery. I started to talk about it. And I continued to be highly dishonest. And I knew, I wasn't in denial, I knew that when I picked up sugar at ShopRite or Dunkin' Donuts, whatever, I knew what I was doing. The dishonest part was that I didn't tell anybody about it. And I lied that I was still abstinent when I really wasn't. And it didn't take a genius to figure out that I really wasn't doing that great, because I didn't look like I was doing that great. What I'm here to share is that somehow this past 5 weeks ago, I surrendered in a different way. I surrendered to weighing and measuring. I hate weighing and measuring. I'm doing weighing and measuring. I surrendered to service. I didn't really want to do a lot of service, but I knew that I needed to do service because I needed to give back. I don't have a lot to give. When you're not abstinent, you become a taker. Your mom's a taker, not a giver. And I took a lot of other people's recovery and stories and support and encouragement, but I didn't give much back because I didn't have anything to give. You know, I read and I write. I'm not as consistent as I should be, but I'm working on that. And I'm getting back to eventually sponsor. My program has to be abstinent for 90 days in order to sponsor. But I had enough to do service here, and I'm grateful that you asked me to do that. The difference, probably the most significant difference, is that I'm not doing the yay thing where I used to have like a month or a year or 3 months, and it was a big celebration. There were balloons and flowers, and I got coins, and it was wonderful. They're still in my dresser. I'm very happy, but they're not meaningful to me because the coins didn't keep me from going into a very long and very ugly relapse. So for today, I'm really working this one day at a time. The first day of my recovery, of this recovery, I had no idea that this was going to be a 5-weeker, or God willing, a 10-year, or a lifer. It was just the first day, and it was white knuckle. For those of you who are not aware of that term, it means you're abstinent, but you are struggling. You've got cravings left, right, and upside down. Every which direction, lots of cravings, but you're just kind of like taking it little by little, and you're going through the day. And after about 4 days, I started to feel better. I work a food plan, which is really healthy. I don't feel deprived in the least. Once I used to have a food plan that didn't include any diet products, meaning soda or gum. I allow myself some of that. I know some people think it's a crutch. I do too, but I need it for now. Someday, I hope to have a stronger recovery that I don't need that. But at this point, I'm not quite there. I'm really, really working one day at a time. For today, I committed my food. I ate what I committed. I have one more meal left when I get home, and that's really all I'm worried about. I pray that some of the weight will take care of itself, because I am a good 60, 70, maybe 80, who knows, pounds overweight, but I'm still very overweight. But you know what? It's not always how much abstinence I have and suddenly I'm like, you know, slim again. I earned every single pound I put on my body. I did a lot of work for that poundage. And, you know, I'm going to have to do a lot of work to take it off. I'm older. You know, I've had kids, whatever. I mean, I'm grateful to be standing here. I made a little joke, and I've told it a couple times with Amy. Whenever I've had relapse, I don't suddenly say, well, this is day one of relapse. Woo-hoo! And then I can say to you exactly how much relapse I've had, as like recovery, where we celebrate and people know exactly how many days. What I gave you was an estimate, because I never wanted 6 years. I never wanted one day, but that's what I got. And for me, what they say in OA has been true. Every relapse has been longer, longer, longer than the last one. So if you do the math, you know, 1 week, 3 months, 6 years, you know, I don't want to find out what that fourth one is going to look like. Yeah. You know, I really don't. It's really frightening. And I'm working a triangle program. The triangle is physical, which is my food plan, my commitment to my food plan, and abstaining from those, from sugar, wheat, and flour, for me, and quantity. The third is the emotional, which is keeping my side of things clean, really watching out for those character defects, and being as kind and loving and patient and all that good stuff as I can be, and making amends and owning my stuff when I make a mistake, and I still do. And the spiritual, which is having a relationship with a God that I never believed in when I first came into OA. And that relationship could be anything from just waking up in the morning and saying, God, help me. I need help being abstinent. I'm a food addict. I always need help being abstinent, always. To, you know, help me with the situation that I'm struggling with. Help me not eat over X, Y, and Z. Help me feel close to you and feel that I'm not alone. And I watch the whole. I'm going to mention them again because I think they're really, really critical and they've helped me. I watch hunger. I watch anger. I watch loneliness, tired. And for me, the biggest one is sick. When I'm sick, I feel like I have license to just, you know, follow myself. And when someone else in my life is sick, it's even worse. So for today, I'm not going to share too much more because I'm sharing next week. But I have young kids, and this is not a license for me not to work this program. I mean, tonight, poor Gumpar, I met my husband at Rite Aid. I gave him my kids, so he took them home so I could be here on time, you know, because I've often used them as an excuse not to come here on time. And I made it on time. And he's doing what he needs to do to get them, you know, to sleep and all that. And I'm here because this is what I need. This is like the fundamental base for my life on a day-to-day basis. Without working a strong OA program, which means core is abstinence, step zero, putting the food down, step one, powerlessness, step two, you know, the rest. Without that, I can't really give myself in any way of my life. And I'm called upon, whether I'm abstinent or I'm not abstinent, to give. I always have to be a parent, whether I'm abstinent or not. It's just 3 gazillion times harder when I'm not. I always have to be a spouse, a daughter, a coworker, you know, a sponsee, just the many other titles that we all have. So I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful you're here. I hope that OA here, this meeting, and I think it is, a very welcoming meeting. I've been here probably more in relapse than in recovery, and I've always felt welcome. I haven't always felt okay to share relapse because I wanted to be dishonest and hidden. But I'm grateful that this meeting exists and I'm here tonight, and I hope that you take advantage wherever you are of what you're getting here, because not other OA places don't always do this kind of workshop, and I think it's such a powerful way to start off the new year. For me, this is my last thing, I made a list, I'm a list maker. So prior to 2012 coming in, like the day before, I made some thoughts about what I want to do in my OA work in the coming year. And the three that I put were work the steps harder and more in depth, continue to weigh and measure consistently and be honest with my food changes, because like someone else said, that's, you know, could be a relapse slide. And number three is service. I really didn't give it much heed before, but I really need to do more service. The only way I do keep this program is if I give it to others. And I'm not a proselytizer by any stretch, but when I'm asked to do service, I'm happy to do it. So that's it. That's all I have to share. Thank you.
Wouldn't it be a good thing if all meetings had a service position for somebody who would call people that stop attending regularly? A service position for people who stop attending the meeting regularly so they don't just disappear. Somebody, Ronnie, she's here tonight. Hi, Ronnie. She's known for saying, when you make your three phone calls, make one of them somebody you haven't seen for a while. And I've tried to make that a habit. Here in Edison, we have a committee that calls the people that slip out the door and don't come back regularly. I would encourage you to go back to your home meetings, your regular meetings, go through the week care book, and make that part of your practice. If you'd like to see bigger numbers, healthier meetings, don't let people slip away from you. All right, we had a summertime workshop 2 years ago in which we used the abstinence book. It was a writing workshop for several weeks, and every story in this book, a group of people made up writing questions. Matt's holding them up. I brought a bunch of those in tonight. You can write your way back into recovery with your abstinence book and the writing questions. It's a great place to start. If you're tired of doing the same old, you're stuck in a rut, here's an opportunity to use the literature, hopefully share it with a sponsor, another OAer. Those questions are also on the website. There's bookmarks at the front table that you can take home with you that have stickers on it that give you our OA website, the Central Jersey site. We have a writings and resources page with the abstinence questions on it and many other good things. We also posted on our audio library page just this past week the keynote speaker from our August retreat and the Old Bridge Idea Day Marathon speakers. Everything is up for your listening or downloading to MP3 format. Some of them can be converted, the shorter ones, to CDs. And we're going to take a few minute break. Anybody who hasn't signed in or gotten a program or taken some bookmarks, take them for your home groups, please feel free to do so. Now, at the end, I thought all the speakers could come back in case there's questions. So you can sit any place you want to until the end, okay? Yeah. But make sure you put more lipstick on. Stopping the recording. Stop.